Joshua is now very old, and there is much land remaining to conquer and divide among the 9 tribes who have not received their portion. The Lord instructs Joshua to go ahead and apportion the land, and he will drive the Canaanites away from that land. All the tribes will have land except for the tribe of Levi. As Israel moves into the land, they kill the Canaanite people, except for the Gershites and the Maacathites, who will continue to live with the Israelites. The tribal boundaries are set, just as planned. Now, accidents happen from time to time, and people are accidentally killed. The law of Moses provides for these circumstances, and cities of refuge were to be built and provide a place of safety for the killer until he can stand before the court. These were the cities to be built as cities of refuge: Kadesh in Galilee, Shechem in Ephraim, Hebron in Judah, Bezer in Reuben, Ramoth in Gad, and Golan in the tribal area of Manasseh. The Levites are given cities to live in as priests, but they do not own the cities. They are owned by the tribes who have inherited them as priests, and they and their families will live in borrowed homes and eat the donations of the people. Before crossing the Jordan River to conquer the Promised Land under the leadership of Joshua, Moses had designated the land where they camped to the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh. And when it came time to cross the Jordan, these 3 tribes were charged to take their fighting men and join their cousins in the pursuit of their land. The 3 tribes did this well, and Joshua is now sending them back to their homes on the east side of the Jordan. Once back across the river, the 3 tribes build a large altar. It upsets the cousins greatly. They consider the altar as a sin equal to the transgressions committed at Peor and by Achan at Jericho. Now the 3 tribes respond to the accusations, saying they have not built the altar for sacrifice or offerings, but as a memorial to their faith in the Lord, so it can be seen by generations to come. Well, the priests hear the response, and they realize that the 3 tribes have not sinned, and they say, "The Lord is in our midst." Joshua calls all the heads of the tribes to a meeting, and he reminds them of his advanced age. He is about to die, and he charges them to be firm in holding to the law of Moses, and he challenges them to cling to the Lord. He tells them to never return to the nations, not to intermarry with them. And he also warns them that when they transgress the covenant to serve other gods, the Lord will burn with anger against them. There in Shechem, Joshua reminds the tribal leaders of their history, from Abraham to Moses. And finally, the realization of the Promised Land is a reality. It has not been accomplished by their power, but it's been accomplished by the power of the Lord. The people promised Joshua that they will serve the Lord, and Joshua knows that it is not completely true, so he implores them to rid themselves of their foreign gods and turn to the Lord. They promise to do so, and Joshua makes a covenant with them that day. He writes this story in a book to be kept with the law, and he sets a stone under an oak tree as a witness against them if they break the covenant. After dismissing the people, Joshua dies at the age of 110 years. He is buried in the hill country of Ephraim. The bones of Joseph are finally buried in Jacob's cave in Shechem, which he had purchased for 100 pieces of silver. Eleazar, the son of Aaron, also dies, and he is buried at Gibeah in Ephraim. Joshua's death does not mean the work of ridding the land of Canaanites is over. The tribes of Judah and Simeon join forces and fight the Canaanites in their tribal area. Adonai Bezek is a Canaanite king who runs from the Israelites. They catch him and they cut off his thumbs and his big toes. He realizes they have all eaten scraps from his table, and God has repaid him for his unkindness. He is taken to Jerusalem, where he dies. The tribes of Judah and Simeon capture Jerusalem and move on to conquer the remaining Canaanites in the Negev and Hebron and Debir. Caleb offers his daughter Achsah to the man who captures De Beer. His younger brother, Othniel, does the job and takes Akshah as a wife. They ask Caleb for some land and a blessing, so Caleb gives them the land of the Negev. With Judah secure, the two tribes attack the Canaanites in Simeon's land. They destroy Hormah, Gaza, and Ashkelon, but they cannot drive out those living in the valley because they use iron chariots. The city of Hebron is given to Caleb as a promise by Moses. The tribe of Benjamin struggles in Jerusalem, failing to drive out the Canaanite Jebusites. Joseph's descendants take Bethel because they have encountered a man leaving the city and he tells them some secrets about it. That man goes on to the Hittite land where he's going to build a city and name it Luz. Later on, it will be called Bethel. Manasseh is unable to rid his land of the Canaanites, so they begin to cohabitate. Even later, all the forces of the Israelites are not able to completely remove the Canaanites. All the tribes of Israel have Canaanites living among them that they cannot drive out from their land. The angel of the Lord chastises the tribes because they have not completed their task of ridding the promised land of the Canaanites during Joshua's life. And the leaders who saw the miracles of God all followed the Lord and served him. Now they are unable to defeat the Canaanites because they are worshiping Baal idols also. The Lord will not drive out the Canaanites. He will allow them to remain as a thorn in Israelite flesh. Israel sighed, and he will allow their gods to catch the Israelites in a snare. The anger of the Lord burns against them wherever they journey, but the Lord raises up judges from their people to rescue them from the Canaanites. While the judges are alive, the people will serve God, but when they die, the people will return to their wicked ways. So the Lord leaves nations to test the Israelites in their faith continually. So the nations of the Philistines, Canaanites, Sidonites, and Hivites remain in the land to test the Israelites. The descendants of Canaan, Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and Jebusites are living among the Israelites, while the others are living in close proximity to the tribes. And the Israelite men take wives from these nations and accept their false gods into their homes. Finally, the Lord's anger burns and he allows the Israelites to be under the dominance of the king of Mesopotamia for 8 years. The Spirit of the Lord comes upon Othniel, Caleb's younger brother, and he raises up an army and rids the country of the Mesopotamian dominance, and he judges Israel for 40 years. But after the death of Othniel, Israel falls into the hands of Eglon, the king of Moab. So now Israel serves under Eglon for 18 years. The Lord strengthens Ehud, who makes a dagger 18 inches long, and he hides it on his right thigh under his cloak. Ehud makes a tribute and takes it to Eglon. And after presenting it, he tells Eglon that he has a secret message for him. Eglon invites him up to his roof where it is cool and they can speak privately. While on the roof, Ehud takes the dagger and plunges it into Eglon's belly. Now Eglon is so fat that his belly covers over the handle of the dagger. Ehud leaves him on the roof and departs for his house, shutting the doors behind him. Eglon's servants go up to look for him, and they find him there on the roof, but they do not bother him because they think he's relieving himself. And after a while, they become concerned, and they go and they find that he is actually dead there on the floor. Meanwhile, Ehud has escaped, gathered the forces of Ephraim, and he is marching to Moab. And they force the Moabites to a ford in the Jordan River and kill about 10,000 that day. Ehud then becomes the judge of Israel for 80 years. During Ehud's rule, Shamgar also helps Israel by killing 600 Philistines with an ox goad. Following the death of Ehud, Israel falls back into sin. The Lord allows Jabin, king of Canaan, to take control. So for 27 years, he dominates because he has 900 chariots. Sometime during Jabin's control of Israel, Deborah becomes a judge. Sitting under the palm tree between Ramah and Bethel, the people all come to her with their problems and she makes decisions. The armies and chariots of Jabin have been under the command of Sisera for almost 20 years. Deborah calls Barak and presents a plan to capture Sisera and his 900 chariots. Barak is to gather 10,000 warriors from the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali, and they are to go up with Deborah to Kadesh. Word is sent to Sisera that Barak has moved his forces to the area, and Sisera gathers his chariots. Deborah tells Barak that the day has come, and he moves his men to Mount Tabor. Now the Lord stirs up Sisera in front of Barak, and Sisera drops from his chariot and runs away on foot. And Barak attacks the army and kills every single warrior. Sisera hides in the tent of Joel, the wife of Heber, the Kenite. He makes a deal to have peace always. And so Joel gives him water and milk to drink and hides him under a rug. And she acts as if she's watching at the door of the tent, but she has another plan in her mind. When Sisera falls asleep, she takes a tent peg and she drives it through his temple into the ground. She calls for Barak to come see this dead man, and they all rejoice. Deborah and Barak sing a song that recounts their struggles. And there is peace in Israel for 40 years, until Deborah dies. Israel then returns to her evil ways. And this time the Midianites and their Amalekite friends control Israel for 7 years. They plunder Israel with each opportunity, coming like a locust to devour the crops and the livestock each year at harvest. But Israel tries to hide in dens of caves and anywhere they can be away from these Midianites and Amalekites. And so near the end of the 7 years of oppression under the Midianites, the angel of the Lord approaches Gideon at his father's wine press, where he is threshing the wheat. He instructs Gideon to defeat Midian, but Gideon is doubtful. Nevertheless, Gideon asks the Lord to stay there until he returns with an offering, and the Lord agrees. Gideon has asked for a sign, and the Lord gives him one when he brings back the bread, meat, and broth offering. The Lord tells him to place the meat and bread on a stone and pour the broth over it. Then the Lord touches it with the end of his staff, and fire consumes it all. Immediately the Lord disappears. Gideon has his sign, and he builds an altar there. The Lord tells Gideon to take two bulls and go into town to tear down the altar of Baal and Asherah. He is to offer the bulls on the remains of the idol altars. Gideon is afraid to do it by day, so he takes 10 men and destroys the altar at night. When the men of the city wake up the next morning, they are furious. They find out that it's the work of Gideon, so they go to his father's house, and there they demand that Joash deliver Gideon, but he refuses. He tells the men to let Baal fight for himself. That day, Joash renames Gideon, calling him Jerubbaal, since his son had been victorious in tearing down the altar. Afraid, the Midianites and the Amalekites cross over the Jezreel Valley. So Gideon sends a messenger to the four tribes to come and meet him. And Gideon puts a fleece on the floor, and he tells the Lord that if the fleece has dew on it and not on the floor in the morning, then he would know that he would be victorious. Well, the next morning, it's just as Gideon says. Just to be sure, he says to God that he needs one more sign. And this time, the fleece will be dry and the land around it will be wet. And sure enough, just as Gideon said, it was done. He knows the Spirit of God is with him. And all the people follow Gideon to the mountain, but there are too many. So the Lord tells Gideon that a battle won with this many people will look like they were responsible and not the Lord. Therefore, Gideon tells all the people who are afraid to go home. And on that day, 22,000 men leave Gideon and only 10,000 remain. Well, the Lord tells Gideon to bring the 10,000 men to the water for a test because there's still too many men. Those who kneel to drink water are to be sent home. Those who lap up the water are to stay. So only 300 lap the water and the rest are sent home. That night, Gideon and Purah go to the camp of the Midianites so they can make plans. Gideon sees the number of Midianites and their camels as numerous as the sands of the seashore. Now near the camp, Gideon hears a man retelling his dream. A loaf of barley bread tumbles down the mountain and turns the tent of Midian upside down. A man says, "This is nothing less than the sword of Gideon." Hearing this, Gideon bows and worships before returning to the camp. Back in the camp, Gideon divides them into three groups and arms them with trumpets and empty pitchers. He places torches inside the pitchers and tells them to follow him and copy his actions. At the Midianites' third watch, all the groups are in position, and Gideon breaks the pitcher, holds the torches in his right hand, and screams, "A sword for the Lord and Gideon," and blows the trumpet. All 300 do the same, each standing in his place around the Midian camp. The Lord sends a sword against the camp, and they begin to kill each other. And many run from the camp, and Gideon sends the tribes to pursue the Midianites. They catch the leaders. They kill Orbit and Zeb, whose heads they bring to Gideon while pursuing Midian. Now the men of the tribal area of Ephraim are upset because Gideon did not call for their help. But Gideon calms their anger, telling them, "Don't worry, now your fields will not be plundered by these men and their people." And so Gideon asked the people of Succoth and Peniel to give his men bread, but they will not, because Gideon has not captured the Midianite kings there. So Gideon is disgusted and tells them he will return to them when he has defeated the kings. Catching up with Zeba and Zalmunna, they are left with only 15,000 men. 120,000 have perished in the pursuit of Gideon, and Gideon captures the army and the kings and routs them. Back at Succoth, Gideon captures a youth who writes down the names of the 77 princesses and elders of the city. With thorn branches, Gideon beats the elders. He tears down the Tower of Peniel and kills all the men of the city. And he asks the kings of Midian about the men of Tabor, whom they killed. They tell him they were like Gideon, like kings. So Gideon explains that they were his brothers, and had they let his brothers live, he would let them live. He orders his youngest son to kill them, but he is so afraid. So Gideon kills them. The men of Israel beg Gideon to be their ruler, but he will not, and neither would his sons or his grandsons. So Gideon does ask each of them for a gold earring from the spoils of the Midianites. They spread a garment, and each gives a gold ring. The weight amounts to 1,700 shekels of gold, and Gideon makes it into an ephod and places it in his city. However, Israel uses it to worship other gods, and it becomes a snare for Gideon. Now Gideon has 70 sons by his wives and a son named Abimelech by a concubine. And until his death, 40 years later, the land rests. And after his death, Israel returns to worshiping Baal. Now Abimelech, Gideon's son by the concubine, comes to his mother's house to speak to the whole clan at Shechem. And there he asks them, "Would you rather be ruled by one man or by 70 men?" And they all agree by one man. And so Abimelech becomes their king, and they give him 70 pieces of silver. And with that 70 pieces of silver, he hires a mercenary to go out and kill his brothers. But Jotham, the youngest brother, hides in a cave, and he avoids the slaughter. When Jonathan hears that Abimelech has become king, he comes and he tells the people a story, a parable, about plants who want to serve each other, but none of them will leave their place to do so. And finally, this bramble tree says, "I tell you what, if you'll come be under my shade, I'll protect you. But anybody who does come will be consumed by fire." And Jonathan says, "I tell you, if you do not serve Abimelech, you will be consumed by fire." So Abimelech rules as king of Shechem for 3 years. And he deals treacherously as a king. Now Goal comes to the city with his men, and he asks about Abimelech because he wants to become the king. Abimelech hears about this and goes to fight Goal. The fight lasts all day, and finally Abimelech wins. So he goes back to the leaders of Shechem, and he hears that they're in the tower, and he cuts down a branch with an axe, and he lays it on his shoulder, and he tells them to do the same. They all put the branches in the bottom of the chamber of the tower, and they set fire to them, and all the men in the tower die, about 1,000. Abimelech finds the rest of them hiding in a tower in the middle of the city, and he approaches it to burn it, but a woman throws a millstone which crushes the skull of Abimelech. Abimelech has his servant run him through with a sword so that his name will not be shamed by death at the hands of a woman. And with his death, all the men run to their homes, and God repays the wickedness of Abimelech and the men of Shechem.